Welcome to the Health Fix Podcast, where health junkies get their weekly fix of tips, tools, and techniques to have limitless energy, sharp minds, and fit physiques for life. Hey, health junkies. On this episode of the Health Fix Podcast, I'm interviewing Risa Grew. She's a functional nutritionist and a certified autoimmune coach, and she's the author of the book Food Frame. Diet is a four-letter word. It's a fun title. Now, Food Frame is cool because Risa's looking at things in terms of how diets can really mess us up if we do the wrong one. And really, here's the thing. Getting rid of this concept of diet, it's more the concept of, doc, what should I be eating? And Risa really breaks it down in terms of what's best for folks and how to use this framework to determine what particular food should you be eating at any particular season of your life based on what you're going through. So I'm really enjoyed my podcast interview with Risa, and I hope you guys will too. We talk a lot about food. We talk a lot about how helpful it can be based on certain conditions and what you can do, but also how to get your kids involved. So let's jump into the podcast. Hey, health junkies, I have Risa Grew on, and boy, we are going to be talking about something that's probably the most common question that I get asked hands down, and probably have been asked hands down in the last 15 years of being in practice. Doc, what do I eat? So Risa, welcome to the Health Fix Podcast.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here.
So you have a story that is probably not unlike a lot of folks that come into my office. They know something's off. They're not really sure what it is. And they're going, could it maybe possibly be my food, but I hope it's not. Please tell me it's not my food.
So I'm thinking from me.
Right. Like, no. So tell us, give us a little background on you in terms of your story here and how it brought you to creating such a huge, like, I'm looking at your programs online, folks are going to be blown away. So give us the background. How did you discover?
Yeah. So, you know,
the problem.
Well, we kind of all have a little shtick with food, right? Mm-hmm. We're punished with it. We're rewarded with it. We're celebrated with it. I mean, as we grow up, we have this really kind of strange relationship about food, right? Mm-hmm. It's not just what we eat for fuel, right? Not like brushing our teeth. We have a lot of more attachment to it. And so I grew up in my home, my mom was, I felt like she was always on this diet, you know, she was trying to lose the same 5 to 10 pounds my entire childhood. And it was, you know, foods were fattening or they were bad or they were good. And I thought, what's this relationship with food? It's food, right? We should be eating it. Why is some bad? And so I got this really bad relationship with food. And then, you know, it caused me to be chronically on this diet, you know, in high school, which I probably had to lose about 3 pounds. And so it was just always this deprivation and starvation. And so as I grew older, you know, it never really got better. As I think as women, we really suffer with our relationship with food, right? And so, so it didn't really help me. And then and I was always interested in nutrition. I just was fascinated by it my whole life. And then I got married and I conceived my first child with no problem. And then I could not conceive my second child. I couldn't hold the baby. I couldn't get pregnant. And I started to take a deep dive. And through that process, I found out that I had this underachieving thyroid, right? I was diagnosed with hypothyroid. And I thought, why is my thyroid an underachiever? So I started deep diving into this. And anyway, I finally did get pregnant. I did some acupuncture, and then I realized I had this gene mutation, which is very, very common, called MTHFR, that can cause infertility and miscarriages. And so I started taking methylated B vitamin. And next thing you know, I got pregnant, had a very healthy pregnancy, and I have two fabulous kids. But shortly thereafter, I was diagnosed with Hashimoto's, it's an autoimmune disease attacking your thyroid gland. And I thought, wow, what is going on in my body? Why am I in the state of attack? And so I was already at that point through my process in nutrition in my education program. And then I realized that everybody almost has Hashimoto's, right? It's everywhere. And everybody, it feels like, has autoimmune disease. And we're rapidly increasing our numbers of autoimmunity. And I just did a major deep dive. And so I was already en route to becoming a nutritionist. I left my corporate sports marketing jobs in the past, and I followed my passions and became a nutritionist. And people started walking in my door, and I would give them the exact same eating program. And I would say, this is great. And then some people would walk in and say, this is amazing. And some people would say, I don't feel well. It's not working for me. Mm-hmm. And I really tried to figure out, why is it that some people can eat a certain way, but others can't? We all know that story where that new diet type book comes out, right?
Right.
We all say, oh my God, I've lost 42 pounds and my neighbor lost nothing, right? Or conversely, my neighbor lost 42 pounds and I went on keto and I didn't think I lost a pound, right? So I realized that not every eating lifestyle is for every single person.
Absolutely.
And that we really, like, we're in this day and age now, we're in the 2022, that we should be, people know, Netflix knows what we like to watch on TV. Spotify knows what we like to listen to. We should be customizing our food to exactly what we are meant to eat. And so I figured out, I created my food frame method. Mm-hmm. And I realized that we should be all eating according to our current health status.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
Go ahead. I kind of interrupted you.
Yeah, no. I was just saying, so if you have blood sugar dysregulation, there are certain different eating lifestyles that you would be best to follow. So when I wrote my book, Food Frame, I really took the 6 major diet types or eating lifestyles that are best suited for pretty much everybody I work with. Occasionally, I have to go out of the box for a specialty, but for the most part, it is these 6 different diet types. And it works. It really is amazing. When you eat according to what your health status is, you start to thrive, right? Mm-hmm. And we have a fire in the basement. There's no way we're going to be giving out our resources, right? For those people who have, I get them in my office occasionally, they've done everything that they possibly can and they still can't lose weight. They eat well and their thyroid's good. All these things are good, but what about their inflammation numbers? Because, as I said, there's a fire in the basement. Our allopathic conventional medicine physicians will give them a little squirt gun, right? Maybe, mm-hmm. Here, try and put the fire out with this. So you need a fire hose, right? And then once the body's out of the state of urgency, then the body can start giving out resources. But right at the time of inflammation and urgency, they hold on to every single resource that it has. So it just doesn't want to give up weight.
That's such a common thing. And especially as we head into perimenopause and beyond, it seems like there's just with that inflammation factor, there's just this switch that just goes. And a lot of women, I will hear over and over again, doc, I've tried every diet, I'm done, I don't care anymore. And, that makes me sad because unfortunately it's been just such a common to jump from one thing to the next and not give it enough time, but also not exploring. And I know that you're into looking at labs as well, because you've mentioned it on previous podcasts and into your website as well about looking at labs and finding those inflammation numbers. I'm just curious, what numbers do you look at, folks? Do we look at C-reactive protein? What are all you looking at so that folks can kind of hear from someone else besides me as to what you're checking into?
Yeah, I'm looking at 4 major blood sugar regulating markers. So I'm looking at fasting glucose, hemoglobin A1C, but I also look at fasting insulin and C-peptide to determine if there's insulin resistance. Yeah. Okay. And so that's a really big factor. A lot of people don't realize they have insulin resistance where the cells cannot receive the glycogen, the glucose to fuel to make ATP from the mitochondria. So that's a really big factor. And I'll get into the 5 reasons why we gain weight or cannot lose weight, but blood sugar is one of them. And so the other markers that I look at, I look at all the liver markers and kidney markers, but I look at inflammation. I look at CRP, C-reactive protein, and I look at homocysteine. So homocysteine is a major inflammatory marker, but it also has a lot to do with methylation, that gene mutation that we have people typically who have MTHFR not even realizing it and do not get that B vitamin will have those methylation issues. And so we see an elevated homocysteine. Well, homocysteine is, leads, if it's high enough for long term, it can lead to cardiovascular disease and dementia and macular degeneration. And so we don't want those inflammation markers. I also look at iron, a full panel of iron, and I'm looking at your storage, your ferritin, because the ferritin is an acute phase reactant. So I'm looking at that. And I look at the full breakdown of the thyroid. So all nine markers of the thyroid, I'm looking at the white blood cells and looking at a pattern. I'm looking for a viral pattern or a bacterial pattern to see if there's some underlying root causes there that could be driving the blood sugar issues or could be driving thyroid dysregulation or autoimmunity.
Nice. Nice. Yeah, let's geek out for a second on those nine markers of the thyroid, because I think a lot of people might be familiar with their doc running TSH and maybe free T4 if they're lucky. And if they go to a naturopath or a functional medicine doc, you might also get something called reverse T3. And you maybe get something called anti-TPO, which is anti-thyroid peroxidase, folks who are listening. And then anti-TGs, which is thyroglobulin antibodies to the thyroid. Now, what are the other ones that folks may not have come into contact with?
Yeah, that would be an amazing panel if I got that. I never really get that when people walk in the door. So that's why I order my own. But in addition to that, I look at free and totals for both for T3 and for T4. And just for your listeners to understand, T4 is our inactive thyroid hormone. It's 93% of that equation, right? We have to cleave off one atom of iodine and we get our active thyroid hormone, that's T3, and that's only 7%, right? So I equate it to trying to build a fire, right? TSH is the kindling. That's what the pituitary, the brain is making that. It goes through the liver. This is why we detox, right? And we create T4. That's our wood. So kindling and wood are really important for a fire. But if you do not have a match, you will not have a fire. So that T3 is your match. And as you mentioned, allopathic medicine will just test for that TSH because usually, I mean, the body's supposed to give an alarm when there is no fire to give it more kindling, but it doesn't, it's not always the case. Mm-hmm. And then the other marker that I test for in addition to the two antibodies is T3 uptake. Mm-hmm. And T3 uptake is really important for our menopausal, perimenopausal, and really any woman, because anybody who's on birth control or anybody who's taking hormone replacement therapy is because it has to do with estrogens that are affecting the thyroid. It will compete for that thyroid cell. And it will, if you have excess estrogen, it will beat it out typically. So hormones are very, very important, integral part of the thyroid.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think it's something that, you know, said about this estrogen excess situation that sometimes can happen on a roller coaster with the perimenopausal folks. I mean, this can be the difference between thyroid working okay and thyroid not working so well, guys. So this is something to really, really pay attention to. Now, of course, we started everything talking about food, diverted to a little bit of inflammation, because let's be real, most women, when they come in for their health stuff, it's usually when the weight is a problem. That's usually right. One of the biggest triggers. Like I'm a little tired. I'm just, you know, we can make excuses for that all day, but when the jeans don't fit, all bets are off. Now we got to go. What's the deal? So let's talk about these different food frames that you have in a little bit more detail, because guys, of course, as I mentioned in the preview here, I talked about Risa's book, which I find hilarious that you're calling it the food is a four letter word, because really for most of my life, I have a very similar story to you where my mom was always on a diet, trying to lose the same, in her case, 20 pounds and never happened. And then of course, then it gave me this whole relationship with what the heck do I do with food? And, you know, probably about 5 years ago, I really like had to come down to the fact that I was like, I think I have an eating disorder based on all of this stuff and avoiding and whatnot. And so a lot of people will come to me and go, I don't know what to eat. And I feel like I already am like damaged about food. So the food frame, how do we get around that with the food frame? Tell us what the background is there.
Yeah. So there's, and your story is so similar to, I mean, everybody has stuff, right, with food. Mm-hmm. It's crazy. So it's about time we take control of our eating and have a good relationship with food. It's our fuel. We should have a good relationship with food, and we should be setting an example for our daughters and our sisters and other women in our universe, that food is not a tool of punishment, of deprivation or reward, or, you know, it's fuel. Mm-hmm. So there's six different diet types, food frames in the book. And so they're specific. So the first ones that I would talk about for blood sugar dysregulation is paleo and keto. So paleo is basically, it stands for Paleolithic times, and it basically is like the caveman diet. So it's based on what we were actually born to eat. What is our raw materials? What equipment do we have? And what that equipment that we're born with, what is it supposed to, what is it there to process, right? Mm-hmm. And so these are animal proteins, things that are growing from the ground. So any vegetables, sweet potato, yams, and good fats, eggs, nuts, seeds, olives, olive oil, coconut oil, avocado oil. And there's no dairy, there's no grains. Those came years later. There's no gluten, there's no sugar, there's no processed food. And it really focuses on quality. And it is my favorite of the six because it is it has the most broadest appeal. Mm-hmm. So most people will do extraordinarily well with paleo, mm-hmm. Without many exceptions. And it really is just an anti-inflammatory diet. And that's pretty much how I eat in a paleo way. Mm-hmm. So nobody can really go wrong with that. Then there's keto, and keto is short for ketosis. The body is trying to get into the state of ketosis. So what is ketosis? Our fuel are, as I mentioned earlier, we all have these trillions of cells and we have these receptors on the cells. And inside the cells, we have these little things called mitochondria. Mitochondria are super important. They're very indicative of our long-term health and the quality of our health. And what it uses, there are energy factories, and what it uses is glycogen. So we eat any kind of sugar or any carbohydrate that turns into a sugar, and the pancreas pumps out insulin and it converts it to glycogen and it puts it in the cell, and that cell creates the energy. So, when we're in the state of ketosis, we stop that production, or we really slow down considerably that production of carbohydrates and sugar. And we switch to a higher fat content eating lifestyle. So you're eating about 75 to 85% of your daily intake is in fats. Mm-hmm. And they don't even have to be good fats. They can be bad fats. So you can have all the butter and cream and bacon and eggs and animal protein that you want typically, because we're really trying to not drive any carbohydrates. We're trying to create very little insulin. And so we switch our fuel source to fat, and then we can take from the storage unit. So a lot of people can do really well with this. And this is something that I recommend for people who have a lot of weight to lose or who have very, very high levels of diabetes. So you're well in your sevens or your eights on your A1C rather than just sort of at 6.4, but you could still do it at 6.4. What I do not recommend for keto for people is people who do not have a gallbladder. This is not the lifestyle for you. Yeah. And then I test, I do a very comprehensive stool test. So I look at steatocrit to see if you have any fat malabsorption. I also look at GGT on a blood test to see how sludgy your bile is, to see if you're sludgy and you're having a hard time digesting your fats. This is not for you. Mm-hmm. And then men typically do better on keto, and women don't do as well. And it seems that cortisol has a lot to do with the success rate for people with keto. So if you're really got a lot of cortisol driving and you've got this high stress lifestyle, it wouldn't be for you. But everybody else would probably do really well on keto. And the challenge with keto is getting enough fiber in. Mm-hmm. You're eating a lot of fats without fibers. And so that's a tricky part. I don't recommend keto for longer than a 3-month stint. I would say do it for 3 months, take a few weeks off, maybe a month, and get back on it if you want to. There's a lot of studies that saying that this is really good for your health. And as I said, for somebody who has major blood sugar dysregulation, this would be a great option for you if you don't have those other things.
Yeah.
And go ahead.
Oh, I was just gonna say, I've seen in the research where it does seem to dramatically turn around diabetes, things of that nature. I have found that some women with menopause, and I don't know if it is the cortisol levels per se, or a little bit of the estrogenic effect or what's going on, but I've seen some women just definitely struggle on the keto side of things in that aspect.
And it's very frustrating for women. It just is. For me personally, when I did keto, I could not even get into the state of ketosis. I just couldn't. I needed exogenous ketones to get into that state. So not everybody can do get into ketosis. So I recommend if you do want to do it, just take a urine test or a prick test, a blood prick test, to make sure you're producing enough ketones to get into the state of ketosis.
Yeah. Yeah. That's definitely something that, you know, I encountered myself when I was doing the same diet, had to use the powdered ketones.
Right.
Yucky things, man. Yeah,
just yucky. Exactly.
Funky stuff. So if you guys have ever tried that, that's a whole nother podcast. So right. Keep going. Tell us more about the rest of the food frames here.
So if you have IBS, irritable bowel syndrome, or IBD, irritable bowel disease, or you have SIBO, which is very common. Most people don't even know that they have SIBO, SIBO is small intestinal bacteria overgrowth, where a bacteria parks itself in the small intestines rather than the large, and it absorbs water. So what happens, these people are people who have chronic bloating, and it's usually coupled with chronic diarrhea or chronic constipation or an alternating chronic diarrhea and constipation. So these people would do really, really, really well with the low FODMAP eating lifestyle or food frame. And low FODMAP, FODMAP is an acronym that stands for fermented oligosaccharides and disaccharides, monosaccharides, and polyols. And in plain English, these are carbohydrates that will cause a methane gas production typically, and you will bloat and cause all those other things. So this is a elimination diet. And so it's from 30 to 90 days. The stricter you are at the beginning, the better off you'll be. And if you can go 90 days, that would be great. You get a little bit more leniency as you progress, but it can be extraordinarily effective. I've seen people tons of times that can help accompanied with supplementation to be able to kill the SIBO, which is very recurring. So it's, but at least you can always go back to low FODMAP if you needed to. Okay. So that one's a little restrictive. It is not calorie restrictive, but it is restrictive as far as what foods that you're able to have, and it's quantity restrictive. Mm-hmm. So you can have one asparagi, let's say, for the first week, and then the second week you can have two, and so on and so forth. But you can eat animal protein, and there's plenty of food that you can eat, but you do have to be very careful. These are the people who have hard time with onions and garlic. So that's a great eating program or food frame for those people. And then there is low lectin and autoimmunity. So AIP, which is autoimmune protocol, is a wonderful program, food frame that you can do. And I recommend this for anybody who has any kind of autoimmune disease. If you have more than one autoimmune disease, I would absolutely jump on this immediately. This is very restrictive. There is no question about it. It is an elimination diet as well, 30 to 90 days. I would encourage you, if you have two autoimmune or anybody, to do at least that it would do the 90 days. You'll feel amazing. And a lot of people, I was working with somebody who had Tourette's. She saw a tremendous decrease in her Tourette's from doing autoimmunity. And a lot of people will not have flare-ups. A lot of rheumatoid arthritis patients will see a major decrease in pain. So I'm a big fan of AIP. It's very similar to paleo, but it's a little bit more restrictive. So there's no nuts, there's no seeds, there's no alcohol, no chocolate. There's no nightshades. Nightshades are a big one that can cause inflammation. So it is a bit restrictive, but again, it's a really great payout for those people who have autoimmunity. So it's something I do recommend for sure. And then once you're finished with the AIP protocol, I recommend either the low lectin food frame or the paleo food frame. And low lectin is sort of similar to AIP, but lectins are basically they're protective coatings on brands or seeds or germs, basically on plants. Mm-hmm. And so as living organisms, we all have the ability to cope with danger, right? Humans, we will flee, kick, scream, yell, call 911 to flee a situation, some danger. And plants don't have that ability. So what they do is they have what I call hard candy shell around that germ or that seed. And they want to protect themselves, right? Because we all want to survive and procreate. Those are our two main goals as living organisms. And what happens is it's very hard to break down that outer shell. So for people who don't have a very acidic environment in their stomachs, let's say they're taking antacids or they just have a lot of stress, they don't produce a lot of digestive enzymes, this would be good because you cannot break down those lectins. Very difficult. Those are the people who will bloat with hummus and beans. They say, oh, don't bring those near me. Those are not good, right? So they know who they are. And low lectin would be great. So it is another anti-inflammatory eating lifestyle. And so I love low lectin. And then there's vegetarian or vegan. I go through that in the book in great detail, the different types of vegetarian that there are. And this one is not really one of my most recommended food frames. Mm-hmm. I know that people have a lot of attachment to being vegetarian. I'm a former vegan myself, and I understand that process. So if they are, I have some people who I work with who have, for religious reasons, just have never had meat, or people who really have a lot of ethical ideas around that, I'm totally okay with that. Then I recommend this kind of vegetarian. It has a wide scope. So you have vegetarians who are eating French fries, Oreos, and Coke versus the vegetarians who are eating actual vegetables and food that fuels them, right?
Yes, yes. I think I had a stint in high school as a cheese and breaditarian.
Right.
Exactly. That was really when you break it down.
Yeah. Yeah. The good way to gain weight.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Yeah. But I always recommend my detox to start for the 2 weeks while you're figuring out your food frame, because it's really important. We have so many toxins. The FDA, this is a new number, I'm sorry to report, has approved 86,000 chemicals for us to use, well over 3,000 we can eat. And we're about 2,000 approved every year, no matter who's in the White House. And most of them aren't even tested. So we have to be very diligent about our toxins.
Absolutely agree. Absolutely agree. It's something that I definitely talk about quite a bit here on the podcast, between that and your drinking water, air you breathe, trying to control what you can inside your home and office place. It's a big deal. It's a big deal. And unfortunately, a lot of people will ask me, well, how did we get here in the first place? Well, the chemicals in your food. That's how this happened.
Yeah.
And sadly, how did the bacteria happen? Well, the chemicals in the food, reduced your immune sense. And so it's a conundrum. It's such a conundrum. Now there's one thing that you mentioned about, need to go back to it. And I think a lot of people will want to hear your opinion on it. The oils back in paleo, I'm going to go back through a couple of different of the foods, because what I found with the oils is that sometimes there's a difficult understanding between the refined oils and the non-refined oils when it comes to paleo. Mm-hmm. How do you help folks find the right oils for their body and what they deal with the best?
So great question. Pretty much everybody would do well with anti-inflammatory oils. And what are those? So you want to cook with oils that have high heat, that have a high smoke point, right? If we don't, we're heating up these oils, we're increasing the volume of the molecules, and basically it becomes rancid. It becomes an inflammatory oil. So these are oils like soybean oil, canola oil, vegetable oil, safflower oil, sunflower oil. These are all treated. Usually in a restaurant, you'll find these oils. Sometimes you'll get it's a blend. Mm-hmm. So the blend is basically all canola oil with a drop of olive oil, right? And who even knows? But yeah, it's cheaper. It's more shelf-stable. It doesn't have taste. There's a million reasons why they use it, but one is cost. And I don't care which restaurant you go to. I've asked every wonderful restaurant. I've gone to 5-star spas and I ask the kitchen. That's where I get the blend usually, but they are everywhere. So consider yourself when you're dining out, unless you are at a major committed health food restaurant, that you're having bad, rancid inflammatory oils. And it's interesting. I'm working with a rheumatoid arthritis patient right now, who we got her down really, really, really far. She was really not having any inflammation, any pain, any flare-ups at all. And then it came back and I said, well, what oils are you using? And she was actually using olive oil at high heat. And she took it out. And the next week I spoke to her, she said, it's gone. Mm-hmm. So it could just be that. So the things that do have high smoke point values at are avocado oil and coconut oil. Mm-hmm. So both of those are great to cook with at high heat. Olive oil is one of the best oils on the market if you can get a good clean one, but it's really better at raw or at lower temperatures. And then I use sesame oil as well. I use that occasionally when I do an Asian dish or something like that. And that has a decent smoke point as well. So those are the ones that I would recommend. And I would, all the rancid oils, it's really an amazing way to increase your inflammation. Very effective.
Yeah. And I think for a lot of people, they fall into the trap of the healthy junk food that we have on the market, the organic chips that are in expeller pressed safflower and sunflower. And unfortunately, you know, you read that and you're like, oh, you know, it's organic. I'm, you know, I joke, no calories, you know, but there's also the concept of, oh, I'm eating these things that are supposedly cleaner, but really when you break it down, it just, you just paid more for it. You just paid more.
I go to the natural food show every year and I walk the aisles and every year it's bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. I mean, it's crazy how big it is and it's fun. It's, you walk down the aisles, but I sometimes say, remember, this is still all made in a factory. Mm-hmm. These all have nutritional panels, right? We should be eating foods that do not have ingredient panels, right? Because we should just be eating things that grow from the ground and crawl on the earth, right? But it, so it's hard because there is a better for you junk food market for sure.
Right.
Occasionally that's okay. But you've, as you said, there's a ton of expeller pressed is better, but it's still not as good. So
that brings me to one of the other objections that I get a lot from patients. They're like, okay, if I'm going to be making whole foods and really cooking for myself, is there any way to hack it to make it easier? Because now I have to make everything, you know, from scratch. So I'd love to hear how you help your folks to create a plan that's sustainable for them.
So there's a few ways. I mean, I always say when you go to work, right, if you have to have a presentation, do you do any preparation or do you just go in blind, right? So if you want to be successful at anything, if you want to be a successful athlete or be good at, you know, crossword puzzles, I mean, it takes practice. You have to prepare. You have to give it some time. You have to value that. And so there is some time. Now, there are tons of organization companies that will send food, prepared food to your door. So we're really living in a day and age where it becomes really, really easy to do that. They'll even send you food that's chopped that you can actually just make it in your own pan. But so we really have a lot more resources than we used to. So that's another way to do it is for those people who just do not want to cook, I would absolutely recommend those food services. There are some clean ones out there that can deliver to your door versus ordering in day after day after day. It's just the inflammatory oils and the bad ingredients, the very low quality ingredients are going to affect your health for sure. It's an accumulative effect. But the other thing I do is I say on a Sunday or in a, whatever day that it is that you have to cook, make a big batch of chili or cut all your vegetables or make a big jar of pesto and put it one in the freezer and, you know, just put things in the freezer so that you can pull it out. If you need to pull it out by serving, great. You can make a bunch of turkey burgers and put them in the freezer and pull them out as needed. So I just say, if you're cooking, just cook a lot and put it in the freezer, cut your vegetables.
So cutting your vegetables, you know, that's one of the things that I wish vegetables would just wash themselves and cut themselves. I feel like that would be so much easier for a lot of people. And a lot of people will ask me about cutting vegetables and be like, can I get the ones that are in the bag at the grocery store? Are those okay? What's your opinion on that?
So, you know, I'm a big fan of anything that's convenient, but really the long road is always going to be the better road because it's just got more nutrients. So the carrots that you're buying that are in little tiny shapes, you know, they're not grown out of the ground like that.
Right.
So they're processed, they're washed, they're peeled, they're just processed. But they're better than Twinkies. There isn't a question about that. But if you could do it, take it one notch higher, I would get the carrots. I get it with the tops on. Mm-hmm. And then I just take the tops off either at the market or when I get home. And then it's still has all these nutrients in them. And then I peel them and I cut them. And so, for example, on Sundays, I do cut all my vegetables and I put them in the refrigerator because I take a baggie with me to work. And I have a baggie when I get home, that when I'm hungry and I get home at the end of the day, if there is not real food in my refrigerator, I'm going to go into the pantry and find some dead food. Right. Mm-hmm. And I don't have junk in my house, but it's going to be nuts or things that are not, I mean, they're good, but they're not as good as a protein, fat, and fiber. I'm all about protein, fat, and fiber at every chance you possibly have to eat.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. It's funny how you say dead food. Literally, I have come home, not been prepped. And then I'm going like head first into the pantry and finding like morsels of chocolate that have been in there for probably 2 years and stale. And I'm like, tastes horrible, but I'm feeling like I needed this. Oh man. I know it's a thing. It's a thing. So meal prep is huge. And it's one of those things that I try to tell folks, you know, really, there are little hacks, but ultimately, you know, sheet pan meals, all, you know, the crock pot, all that, and really embracing all that. But the bottom line is you can't work your way out of a poor diet. You just can't.
And right. Just like anything you want to be successful in life, you can't go out and run a marathon. You've got to train for it. You've got to work for it. So anything else in life, this is not a shortcut. You have to put the time into it so you can be successful.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And training yourself to eat healthy is a thing too. And I think that's one thing that a lot of folks don't realize is that you can't just all of a sudden flip the switch and be like, okay, I'm not going to eat junk food anymore. You know, it takes time to train yourself to make the meals, to train yourself to even think in a different way about food.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because there's, you know, here's a sad statistic that 1 out of every 3 children born today will be type 2 diabetic. So a lot of kids don't realize where the actual food comes from. They think it comes from a window when you're driving. Mm-hmm. So we need to take kids back to the farm, have them pick. I love fall season because it's a great time to go and pick the pumpkins and pick the squash and pick the green beans so that you understand and have your kids get involved in the cooking and the preparation of food so that they are invested in that. Have them pick out recipes online so that they say, oh, I want to make that on Tuesday. Mm-hmm. I usually say to families, you know, give every kid a night of the week that they get to pick the recipe. They'll get to help it in the kitchen to help with the cleaning or the preparation or the cooking or something so that they take some investment, take some pride in what they're eating. And then they know the source of where it comes from, that it's not just through a window. Yeah. Right? We order from a microphone or, you know, it's just crazy to me, right?
It's true. It's true. And really, you know, once you get that down, moving into growing your own food a little bit, and whether it's in a container pot, you know, just some lettuce or something of that. I mean, I love when I worked in a clinic in Colorado that was sponsored by a group that helped us to teach kids and their families how to cook. And it was my most favorite thing. Wow. Because you would see the kids just like a light bulb, like, oh, wait, we have a garden, because we had a garden as well. And we could take them through, pick it, and then go make food. And it was like, they ate it. There was no question about, no, I don't want that. That's gross. No, I picked that. I'm eating that thing.
Exactly. I love that. That's the best thing you could do with kids.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. Yeah. So gosh, Risa, so much great information today. And I think folks are really going to embrace the idea of the food frame, you know, that just really kind of getting this framework going of like, okay, I don't have to fall into this particular diet per se. I can start with this, progress to something else, and kind of fall into, you know, a sustainable plan for myself and being able to choose it. So your book, I'm guessing, is available everywhere books are available. I saw Amazon.
Mm-hmm. Okay. It's on Amazon, Target, Barnes and Noble, and my website at Risa Grew Nutrition.
Mm-hmm. And if folks want to work with you, I know that they can also do that as well. So tell us a little bit about that so folks can check out your book and then learn how to work with you and all of it.
Yeah, I work with people all over the world, actually, but it's hard to order labs in other countries, but I work with all over the states. And I do it via Zoom, and you can just contact us at the office by email or phone, and we can set up an appointment, an initial nutritional consultation, and then we start working together. We start ordering labs, and that's everything can be found on my website at Risa, R-I-S-A, Groux, nutrition.com. And there is also my course that I just released called Achieving Optimal Thyroid Health.
Nice.
And I'm all about the thyroid. I'm super proud of that class. I put everything I know, and I know a lot about thyroid, into that class. So no matter if you have thyroidectomy, you have Graves, you have Hashi's, you're hyper, hypo, whatever it is, it's going to tell you everything you need to know, what to eat, what not to eat, what supplements to take, what not to take. I mean, a million things all that you would need to know for thyroid. So you can find all that on that. And then I'm on Instagram at Risa Groux Nutrition, and TikTok, and Pinterest, and all those fun places.
Excellent. Excellent. And you also have a detox kit that comes with when someone's working with you in particular, I've noticed, and you've got a special for folks if they want to try out the detox kit. I also think they should probably work with you or something, at least the book at the very least. So tell us how it all goes together so we can.
So I'm a big fan of detoxing because we store those heavy metals or those toxins in our fat cells and our fat tissues. So, I mean, the benefits are amazing. It's mental clarity. It's better skin. It's regularity. People do it for the weight loss, but it is not a weight loss program. I firmly believe that weight loss is a side effect of wellness. Mm-hmm. It is a wellness program. So it's really important to take out the trash so the liver can work optimally and do all its conversions and filterings and all the things that it needs to do. And so the detox is a 14-day program. It's 2 shakes a day with collagen protein. I'm a big fan of collagen, and it has amino acids and antioxidants to help open up pathways 1 and 2. And then you're eating real food. So you're having animal protein, unlimited vegetables, sweet potato, yams, good fats. You'll feel amazing. And it'll just optimize your body once we start getting your blood work and your stool tests. So we usually start off there, and people just, I'm rave reviews about the detox. So I do it personally all the time. I love it. It makes me feel good.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think we all need little resets here and there, just because, as you mentioned earlier in the podcast, the 86,000 chemicals we're being exposed to a day. I mean, there is just that need to help our bodies out as we go on. And in the past, I've said, I don't really know what I think about detoxes when someone's like, oh, I'm going to eat crappy and then I'm going to detox later. I'm more like, I think we need to do it more on a maintenance thing just for keeping us healthy. That's my stance on it.
Exactly. I completely agree with you. I mean, think about if you don't ever clean out your garage, what would happen, right? You can't park your car in there anymore. It's not functional. You can't find anything. So it's exactly like that. We have to do that. Now, we all have the ability to detoxify ourselves, but if we're not methylizing properly, we're not doing that. So it really kicks the can, and it could cause major issues in the future. So absolutely detox at least once a year, maybe twice or three times.
Awesome. Awesome. So folks, you can try out Risa's detox at HealthFix10. That's your code for 10% off. I'll also put that in the podcast notes at drjkrausnd.com. Risa, thank you so much for coming on and chatting all about your book. You guys got to check it out. I will put the notes there as well. And gosh, just such a great amount of information. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me. It was great.
Hey, fellow health junkie, thanks for listening to the Health Fix podcast. If you enjoyed tuning in, please help support me to get the word out about the podcast. Subscribe, rate, and review, and just get that word out. Thanks again for listening.